incident up in Port Sudan. How am I supposed to respond to that?
Zack smiled, his head back on the headrest and his eyes closed. His face was black from filth and red from the blood that had smeared to nearly every square inch of his body, except for where his eye protection had kept the mess away.
Well, sir, if I were you, I'd say that it looks like state's intel sucks as bad as CIA Sudan station's intel. We're 40 miles south of Port Sudan. That's not the point, is it? Do we or did we have a Black Hawk Down incident? Absolutely not. You didn't outfit us with any Black Hawks to go down. Don't get snippy with me, one. Did you secure Oryx?
He's secure.
Have you extracted him to the Hannah?
Negative, but that's the next item on my to-do list.
Sierra 6 has him?
Negative. 6 is with us, what's left of us. I lost a couple of operators to enemy fire. Thanks for asking about my guys, by the way.
Court turned to look at Hightower. It was shocking, even after all that had happened in the past several hours, that Zack would snap at his superior like that. Denny's response showed his focus was on Nocturne Sapphire, not on the health of the team members of Whiskey Sierra.
Who is with Oryx right now?
Court Gentry answered while driving.
Oryx is secure. He's not going anywhere. Why are you and he not in the same damn place?
Whiskey Sierra was compromised. I came back to help. I did not put Nocturne Sapphire in jeopardy.
And if you had been killed?
I transmitted the location of Oryx to the Hannah before I set off. Denny's anger and frustration were evident in his voice.
It is not the job of the men on the Hannah to extract Oryx from the Sudan. The Hannah does not have operators of your supposed caliber, Six, although I can't possibly express to you how disappointed I am with your decision-making abilities in the past week. You should have gotten Oryx out of the country before going back for the others.
Court began to respond, but Zack grabbed the phone and pulled it up close to his mouth.
I've got 100% casualties, 2 KIA. We just spent almost 4 hours battling an infantry force several hundred troops strong with supporting air assets, infantry and air that was not supposed to be there. And our local support that was supposed to be there, didn't fucking show. My information from Sudan Station is that they did show, albeit a few minutes late. Sudan Station may have paid 400 grand for a donkey cop full of rejects to each fire a magazine up an alley and then run away. But other than that, we didn't get a goddamn bit of assistance.
There was a significant pause. Court expected a little contrition, but none was forthcoming.
Nevertheless, you should not have allowed yourselves to be compromised, and Six should not have gone off mission to extract you from your own mess. You knew the risks.
There was an annoyed sigh audible over the satellite transmission.
Now, pull yourselves up by your bootstraps and continue on with Nocturne Sapphire. I will do what I can to negotiate the political fallout over here. That is all.
The line went dead. Zack dropped the phone into his lap. It rolled down his legs to the floor. He was too tired to pick it up and resecure it to his chest rig. Court said,
Damn, Zack. Your boss is an asshole. Tell me about it.
An hour later, Court Gentry parked the Škoda at the shack hidden in the marsh grasses, climbed out, and entered with his pistol raised in front of him. The dark hooch was just as he'd left it, though even hotter and stuffier. Oryx was just as Court left him as well. Gentry had injected the Sudanese president with a syringe preloaded with a sedative that would knock him out for roughly 2 hours, and then he'd flexi-cuffed his hands behind his back and around the sturdy central support beam of the shack. Upon return, he was cross-legged and his head hung down as if sleeping. Between his knees, Gentry had left an open bottle of water. He didn't really know how Abood would have drunk from it, bound as he was. But as it turned out, it appeared that the president had slept the entire time. 30 minutes earlier, Court had dropped the surviving members of Whiskey Sierra and one of their two dead operators at the Oceanside pickup point 14 miles north of Swakin. The men immediately concealed themselves and their fallen colleague in a thick mangrove swamp. Zack handed Court a small receiver that picked up a transmitter on board the Hannah so he could know where the boat was at all times, even if comms went down for some reason. The original plan had been for the Zodiac dinghy from the Hannah to come to shore and pick up the team, but there was no way they would attempt that in daylight now. Instead, one of the crew on the CIA ship would pilot the two-man mini-sub into the swamp and pick up each man, one at a time. It would take the rest of the day to effect this retrieval, but it was felt by all that this was far preferable to having four injured men sitting chest-deep in brackish water for 8 hours while waiting for a night pickup by the Zodiac. Court had been instructed to return to his hide and get Oryx ready to move at a moment's notice. It would be late evening before someone could return for the final two trips to bring the President of Sudan and the Gray Man. But if the pickup site became somehow compromised, Gentry would need to be ready to scout out a new location on his own. Court unhooked Oryx from the support beam of the shack, laid him on his back, then placed next to him his bottle of water and a bag of raisins that had been in his backpack. "Eat," he instructed. Oryx did not move.
"You aren't unconscious, asshole. That hypnotic I gave you has worn off."
The president continued to lie still.
"Dude, I'm really not in the mood to play right now."
The man did not move. Court knelt down above him and lifted his meaty left arm into the air by his wrist. Gentry acted like he was taking his pulse, but he held the arm over the prostrate man's face and let it go. If he were unconscious, the hand would have hit the president in the nose, but instead, it lowered slowly and flopped dramatically to the side.
"Sit up,"
Court said angrily. The man still did not react. Court pulled a multi-tool from his pack, opened the wire cutters, and placed the president's pinky finger between the cold metal pincers. Immediately, President Abood opened his eyes. He smiled sheepishly, his white teeth a stark contrast to his coal black face.
"That is a clever trick, holding the patient's arm over his face like that and letting it go."
"Glad you liked it. Get your ass up or I clip off this finger. Turning you over to the ICC with 9 fingers instead of 10 is just as good as far as I'm concerned."
Oryx sat up in the dirt. He took the water and drank half of it before placing the bottle back down.
"I feel sick."
"Just the meds. It will clear out soon enough, and you probably have a mild concussion from the big bang this morning."
Oryx nodded. He asked,
"How is your back?"
"It feels like some asshat shot me with an arrow. How do you think it feels?"
"Did you rescue your men from my men?"
Court looked into the man's eyes.
"Some of them."
Oryx nodded slowly.
"I regret the loss of life on both sides of the battle today."
"That's incredibly comforting, douchebag."
A genuinely offended expression covered Abood's face. It remained as he asked,
"What happens now?"
"We wait."
"How long?"
"I don't know."
"You don't know?"
"Nobody tells me nothing,"
Court said as he pulled items out of his bag.
"For now, eat your lunch and stop asking me questions."
Oryx shrugged and opened the package of raisins. He seemed more relaxed than Gentry would have expected. As he picked at the tiny pieces of fruit, he said,
"Mr. Six, you must admit I am not giving you any trouble. I do not know why you show so much anger towards me."
Court began taking off his shirt. The burning sting deep into the bone of his scapula made the action miserable.
"Remember, I was coming in to blow your head off, so I honestly don't think you're being treated so bad."
"I was talking about your words to me. Your striking of me back in Swakin. You are not the image of the honorable American soldier that your country tries to sell the world."
"I am not an honorable American soldier."
"Then what are you?"
"I'm the guy they send in when some asshole does not deserve to be treated honorably."
As Oryx chewed raisins slowly, he looked across the darkness at his captor.
"But sir, this is your profession. You are here because of what the West considers to be war crimes in the Darfur region. That does not involve you personally, nor, I will venture to say, does it involve members of your family. There is no reason for you to treat this as a personal vendetta. Can we not keep our relationship at a professional level while we are together?"
Court did not respond. Instead, he opened a tiny bottle of disinfectant he'd retrieved from his bag. He leaned forward, reached back, and did his best to pour it where it would run down his shoulder and into his wound. Oryx continued.
Back in the car, you hit me in your moment of rage because you cannot control yourself. Your anger is more base, more degenerate than the calm reason that I apply to the war in Darfur, for which I have been indicted by this kangaroo court of yours.
Gentry winced as the medicine penetrated the swollen hole in his back. But he looked at Abood across the 3 feet of dim space.
You think I hit you because I was out of control?
Of course you did. I saw it in your eyes. You were scared and angry, and your emotions controlled you. You lashed out.
Look in my eyes now. Am I in control?
Yes, in this moment you are. But...
Court punched Abood in the face again. The man's beefy head snapped back and then forward, his lip fat and red immediately.
What is wrong with you?
Oryx covered his face as he shouted. Gentry tossed the empty container of antiseptic back in the bag.
All sorts of things.
Maniac?
Yeah, you might want to remember that.
Chapter 43. Gentry spent the next 90 minutes telling President Abood to shut up while writhing in agony from the pain in his back. The extraordinary heat and humidity simply plied on to the misery of the afternoon. Twice, Court fished through his backpack for hydrocodone pills, but both times he refrained from taking them. His pain was real, as was his body's desperate need for a moment's respite from the agony, but Court knew he should hold out and wait to hear from Zack. Zack finally called around 4 p.m. He and Mila were back on the Hannah. Dan would be arriving in the mini-sub within the hour. Court was told it was likely they would use the same exfiltration point in the mangrove swamp, as they had not been compromised. The pickup time would be midnight, meaning Gentry would just have to sit tight for the next 7 hours or so before getting Oryx to the water. Court hung up the call with Zack and looked at Oryx. The president stared back at him. His black, bald head was covered in sweat beads that hung like ornamentation, glistening whenever a warm breeze fluttered one of the torn burlap walls enough for the sunlight to filter in to illuminate them. His hands were unbound. Court next looked to his backpack. 7 hours, with nothing to do but sit here and suffer. He thought about the pain and the cramping in the muscles around the pain site, and the fact that he would need to have his body and his muscles as limber as possible for any eventuality as soon as he was on the move again. The only means to that end, he told himself, would be to get some relief for the pain now. He did not need much convincing. 60 seconds later, Oryx had his right wrist zip-tied to the center beam of the shack. His left arm was free to drink water or eat food or to take out his manhood and piss in the dirt if he were so inclined. Gentry made sure there was nothing within reach he could use as a weapon or a tool. Court told himself that Oryx was secure, and Oryx could take care of himself for a while. Next, the American opened his backpack, went right past the hydrocodone pills, and pulled out the most potent injection of morphine the CIA had given him. He tore the preloaded injector from its sterilized package and popped off the plastic tip to expose the needle. Oryx backed away, afraid.
Don't worry, said Gentry. This one's for me.
He injected 20 milligrams of the heavy opiate into his left arm. Immediately, he sat down and leaned back against the wall of the shack, out of reach of his captive. Within a minute and a half, his eyelids began to flutter, his pupils became smaller, and the pain began to subside. Oryx could clearly see the effect the injection was having on his captor.
Madness! What kind of soldier or spy takes drugs during a mission?
Shut up, Gentry said.
The room around him softened into a gentle blur. He then said, a tad too defensively,
The pain will slow me down later if I don't take the edge off now.
And your heroin will not slow you down?
It's not heroin, asshole,
Court snapped back. But he knew the drug was similar in effect to heroin, though it did not produce its high for as long a duration.
You are a drug addict,
Abood said flatly.
And you are a genocidal despot. Get off my back.
Any self-flagellation Gentry may have felt for taking the heavy narcotic while operational went away in seconds, as the rush of the drug's initial effect gave way to an exaggerated sense of well-being. Within 10 minutes of injecting himself, he was deep in conversation with Abood, a 180-degree turnaround from his earlier behavior. But Court was not entirely incapacitated. During the course of their polite conversation over the next half hour, Oryx asked him for his real name and his home address, asked to borrow his phone, and asked if he could get a closer look at his very fine pistol. The gray man was under the influence of a mood-altering opiate, but he was not insane. Each time, he just smiled genuinely. When the gun was requested, he even laughed and replied that Abood had made a nice try. By 4:45, Court was at peace in the dark shack. It was a chemically induced peace, and a peace at a decidedly inopportune time for a warrior like Gentry. As he chatted with Oryx or talked to himself, he found himself incredibly proud to be on this mission, proud to be sent along with the brave men of Whiskey Sierra. God rest the souls of two of them, and proud to be trusted by the legendary Denny Carmichael. With his eyes closed in blissful tranquility, he began to fall asleep, the heavy sedation edging out the loss of inhibition that had him deep in conversation with his captive. Just as his head lolled to the side, his phone beeped. Court stared at it, his eyes wide as saucers. He looked up at Oryx and smiled. "Oh shit, I'm in trouble." He answered it. "Hello?" Hightower said, "Okay, Six, we're gonna have to push up the timetable."
"Oh boy, I don't know. How is everything out there on the boat?"
"Fine, but I'm going to need you to recon another site for the pickup. I think the north side of the mangrove is going to be better at low tide. Get over there and see if it's clear of civvies. There are some Bedouins that have built structures up and down."
"You mean, right now?"
"No, dude, at your fucking leisure. Of course I mean now."
"Oh, okay. I mean, no. Don't be mad. But I need to hang out here a little bit longer."
"To do what?"
Court looked up at the ceiling. He noticed the intricate weave of the thatch. Even in the dark, it was as if each strand of the thick straw had its own personality, its own purpose, its own path through the others as it tucked into and out of the...
"To do what, Six?"
"Come on, Zack. Don't be pissed off. I just need to..."
Court's voice trailed off.
"What the hell is wrong with you?"
"Nothing. I wish you could see the ceiling in this hooch, though. It's fucking beautiful. They dry the reeds and then tie them into little bundles, and then they tie those together to make bigger bundles that..."
"Jesus, Court, are you high?"
Court laughed into the phone.
"Where's Oryx?"
"He's sitting right here. You want to talk to him?"
"Fuck no, I don't want to talk. Here he is."
Court got up, carried the phone over to Abood, who reached out slowly and took it with his untethered hand.
"You are speaking to President Bakri Ali Abood. Who is this?"
Hightower did not answer at first. When he spoke, it was slow, tentative.
"What's happened to my man?"
"Your man has injected himself with some sort of tranquilizer."
"Accidentally, you mean?"
Oryx looked at Gentry. He'd gone back to the wall and leaned against it. His eyes were open, fixed on the ceiling of the shack, his head back against the burlap and driftwood wall.
"Deliberately. Very deliberately, in fact."
It was clear Zack Hightower did not know how to respond to this.
"Okay, well, you listen. I've got many more assets in the area. You try to take advantage of this situation and..."
"Don't worry, Mr. CIA. Before your man decided to enjoy himself, he made sure I was restrained. Your operation is delayed, but I am unable to escape."
"Give the phone back to him."
Oryx looked down at the Thorea and smiled. He pushed a red button to end the call. Six's eyes were still on the ceiling. They were unfixed, the eyelids sagging low. Desperately, the Sudanese president tried to think of the phone number to his office, to his security detail, to anyone. Yes, a secretary at his Khartoum presidential palace. The number just popped into his head. He did not know where he was exactly, but he could move an entire army into the area north of Suakin, south of Port Sudan, west of the coastline, and east of the Red Sea Hills with a single order. He still thought it likely that Six, if he could, would kill him if he felt his kidnapping operation was no longer feasible. But if Six stayed incapacitated for a while, there might just be enough time for a rescue. He began thumbing the numbers on the phone. He looked back up to his kidnapper as he brought the phone to his ear. The small black pistol with the long silencer was centered between his eyes.
I'm going to need that back.
Yes.
Nice try, though, said the American.
Gentry slept for 2 hours and awoke at dusk. He was still heavily under the influence of the morphine, still felt relatively free of the pain in his back, though the euphoria had dissipated enough for him to dread his next conversation with Hightower. Oryx himself had nodded off in the heat, and Court took the quiet moment to sip bottled water and eat a soldier fuel bar. As he chewed, he idly picked up the phone and saw that Sierra One had called 6 times in the past 2 hours. Court set the phone back down in the dirt and finished his dinner. Then he built a tiny fire using grass and twigs and bits of larger pieces of driftwood lying around. He hardly